Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
ARIA International, who are we and what do? That's what we build, but mainly in remote locations. So remote politically, remote geographically, remote logistically. Places that other people would think twice about going to, other people are unsure about how to get things done in these locations. That's what we do. We build turnkey accommodation, provide infrastructure and support services in the most remote locations you can imagine. Myself, it's not my own bandwagon anymore, sadly. I've got all these other men involved. COO, Andrew Balter, who is a CFO, he's ex-EY. Lars, who I am married to, who actually took me to Afghanistan for my honeymoon, where this all started. Completely blame the man. And the rest of the team, Trevor, who handles all of our BD, John, who is Director of Project Management, ex-Royal Navy. So we have a very varied executive management team with a lot of experience that they bring to the table. What do? We are a leading provider of remote site services. Our customers are not African governments, I'd like to reiterate. They are Western governments. We deal with NGOs. We deal with various agencies from the United Nations. We deal with large corporations that operate in these locations. We're currently 1,956 staff, 39 nationalities, and we've delivered now, as of now, about $425 million worth of contracts in 10 countries. We have a proven track record. We're still here. We're still growing. We're still busy. We're very profitable. We're very tight on how we operate the company, quite lean, and we're very disciplined on our capital. So we make sure that what we're investing in is the things that are actually going to give us profitability as opposed to just a numbers game of turnover. We came to the market June 29, one day before the half year interims. Not very, it wasn't the best of years, half years, but it was actually significant to us that we actually made it to the market. And everybody kept saying, why do you want to bring this to the market? Because we felt that we needed to have a stamp on all the work that we've done to date for other people to understand who we are and what we do, and actually get that market credibility from the larger multinational companies that would require our services. Because until now, we don't advertise. It's word of mouth, mainly. So this is what we try and do, but I'll explain it better. So when I went to Kabul in 2002, from this infamous honeymoon, I volunteered for the UN to help set up some of their structures for projects they were implementing. One thing I found out very quickly was that every project had 10, 15 different contractors all operating to try and execute one job. One guy would be sitting in the States raising a purchase order for an item. The other guy is in Geneva, who's also raising something else for the delivery of said item. Three or four logistics company in between. Five or six maintenance guys at the end of it. We always get it wrong. Always arrived wrong because so many people were involved. But then as usual, when you ask, it's like asking your three kids who dropped this, him. Nobody takes responsibility. So I got so frustrated in that we were wasting millions of dollars daily on just no responsibility. Nobody thought, what do I need as an end result and how can I reverse engineer this back to actually give me the solutions that I need? It was just buy this, buy that, stick it together and then it doesn't work. So when I stepped out with one purpose, that this could be done better as a turnkey solution to look at what is the client driving at, what do you actually want to achieve, and we will be a one-stop shop for you using logistics to underpin everything, procurement to procure the goods, bring them in, facilitate the actual maintenance support services of all of these goods that you require, and provide an end solution to the client. And as a result, ARIA International developed. And the first order was for a very small $2,400 generator, and the client wanted it in a very remote location. And the first question I asked was, have you got a vehicle to transport it? No. Do you have anyone to install it? No. Do you have a fuel bladder? No. Do you have cables? No. Okay. So what do you have? Nothing. What do you actually want to do? We want to provide berthing for 10 military personnel in a place called Gardez, which is 3.5 hours outside of Afghanistan, outside of Kabul. But nobody had actually thought through what is the solution? They thought of the things they needed to buy, but not how to bring it together. And that's what RA International does. We bring it together. We bring you a solution in the furthest area you can imagine, depending on what the issues are that you're facing. People ask, do you have competitors? Yes, we do. We have gigantic competitors, well, also our clients, because they carve out all the portions that are in Africa. They carve out the things that are for them too small, for us ideal, and we do that. We have small competitors in the local market that would try and do that. They would try and build accommodation, let's say for the UN, but they have no bonding capacity. They have no insurances. They don't have the technical know-how. They don't have the specs. They cannot procure the goods to match the specs of a Western clientele. Your larger ones, they do have all of the above. They're generally 9 times our price, so they like to subcontract to us. At the same time, they actually don't have the flexibility on the ground or the footprint in these locations. And the locations we're talking about, places like Chad, Central African Republic, Somalia, we've been in Sudan, we've been in Uganda, we're currently in Mombasa. So we have a very widespread of countries that we operate in. So typically, one of these clients would call one of the larger competitors and say, we have this portion of things to be done. Can you do this portion in this location? Yes, we can, is generally the answer. Clientele. UN is not one agency. There's over 100 plus. These are some of the ones we work for. Each one has a different budget. Each one has a different project, management team. They don't operate next to each other. They operate at a distance. They can be in the same country, but it's completely separate budgets, completely separate people that manage these operations. Governments, because all of the governments go in, they are funded through they have embassy work, and you have actually what you would call your NGO work that goes in. So these are some. We've done a lot of work with the Ministry of Defence UK, Foreign Office, Interpol, EU, and these are some of the private sector clients. Adam Smith, Saab Defence, not the car, I might add. Can't see them in Somalia, but Gardaworld, PAE, KBR, Sodexo, these are all of our clientele. National Geographic, my favourite. So these are people that go to these locations for a variety of reasons. Political stability, refugee situation, it could be economic revitalization like Adam Smith currently. It could be that they're just supporting the UN to actually get the UN to do their job in these locations, which is trying to get a country stable, post-conflict, or just after the curve is taken into development. And that's where we fit in. We are the first boots on the ground. We try and get there ahead of the game because we normally have the research done ahead of the game. And when we get to the ground, it's to put up the infrastructure for all of these guys to come in, because they can't come in without that. There's nothing in these locations. They need accommodation, they need power, they need water, they need internet, they need food, they need cleaning, they need toilets, everything. They can't come in if we don't put it up. So that's why we're there first. Where are we? As you can see, nearly all over the place, mainly Africa. Although kindly the MOD did take us to Oman this year, so that was a new one on geography. We kind of keep with the central part. We don't go to South Africa end because that's quite a saturated market for us. These are locations where there is hardly anything. They have issues, these countries. They're coming out of situations. They are being stabilized. They have UN missions or they have other missions that are stabilizing and supporting these countries with training for military troops, with just political and economic, development, like people like the Adam Smith, the World Bank, the Africa Development Bank. So they all have to go in, and these are the areas that they are in that we operate in. So places like the DRC, Ghana, Kenya, Mozambique. Mozambique is actually going to be gas mainly. So all of our clients are within these locations. We have a program management office that sits in Kenya there. We have a logistical backup, I say logistics office in Dubai, because for us, all of our procurement comes through there from Europe, from the States, and we consolidate in the UAE because it's the fastest place to consolidate in, and we can get containers out the door within 48 hours of us getting an order in. So it's actually quite efficient for us. This is what we presented at the beginning of the year, where we were, why we came to market, because we've been growing. And as you grow, you realize that our contract sizes grow. We've never actively gone out to advertise or market to clients. It's clients that are referring us to other clients or growing us with them as they move locations. But as you grow, you get a larger contract size. You get a larger contract size, you need more funds, working capital to mobilize these contract sizes. And one of the things that we realized last year when we looked at our strategic plan was contracts were getting bigger. We needed more funding. We had two options, go raise debt, and we've always been self-funded, or come to market. And when the idea was floated of come to market, I actually said, how would we even explain this? But for some reason, it worked. Thank you very much. We are here at the market and we raise the funding needed for the next level of growth. What Ari is looking at is long-term contracts. We do have short lumpy contracts that come in and now we can't say no, but we're looking at taking on board the 5-year contracts, the 3-year contracts, the 7-year contracts that commercial clients and the UN actually growing us into. Because when we were too small and we had no balance sheet, they weren't comfortable. Now we're at this size, they're very comfortable with 5-year contracts and larger size contracts. When we were very small, we would just take $1 million, $1.5 million as we grew. Now we're in the 10 million and above contract levels. So this is a different ball game for us going forward. Business profile. A lot of people always get confused with this. We go to Africa, we're executing in Africa, but we're not actually working for the government. The people that come to these locations start out, and what happens is the profile goes, we walk in, there's zero, nothing. I mean, when I went to Juba 14 years ago, it was me, a goat, a chicken, well, so I thought it was a chicken, one guy, that was it. There was nothing else, there was nobody there. There was no buildings, there was no nothing. So everything had to be built. You start out and you have the construction phase. You've got to build it for them. We build it for them. And as we're building it, they need the services. They need power. They need facilities maintenance. They need water. They need their vehicles maintained. Because if there's nothing there, you have to provide everything. As we increase the service, we are constructing and the supply increases. You reach 4 years down the lining, you start seeing that you've kind of built just about everything else you're building, and now you're doing more services for them, catering, cleaning, facilities maintenance. And your next curve you go, you're increasing services, services increases, and then we've put in a new vertical about 3 years ago when I thought, to combine all of the things we do, build, take care of you, we'll put up our own turnkey accommodation and lease it back. It proved to be a very large success and it is growing rapidly, where clients are now saying, rather than us have to say we need this kind of camp, this kind of thing, this kind of that, we need 50 offices, 60 rooms, you give us a price. And that's what we did. And the clients have grown. Now this is a UN cycle. Your governments tend to kind of come in just around that cycle. As you can see, you start doing more construction, but it's for them. These are the MODs, your FCOs, your Adam Smith Foundation. They tend to come in around this curve. And again, we build for them, and then the cycle continues for them as well with services and accommodation. Sometimes they don't need accommodation, but here we are, Adam Smith, they've been with us now for 4 years living with us. So then you get to this last cycle where your resource guys start coming in. Country stable, Western governments are in, they've signed all the necessary legalities with the government, everybody's happy, resource guys feel comfortable enough to come in that they'll be able to go get gold, whatever, platinum, iron ore out. But they can't generally come in unless some agreement has been made at this stage with the relevant governments, which is just after the UN. So this cycle, 7 years UN, roughly 4 to 7 for your Western governments and the resource. We have only ever worked the UN cycle because we never had enough cash to do the other cycle and the third cycle. What we started doing in 16 was layering the other clients. We started to have more cash in the bank, so we layered our Western government clients on top of the UN clients, and we took on a commercial contract. And the commercial contract was to see, could the mining industry want our services? We did a lot of research, and yes, they did. So we got first contract with Qatar Mining, who we are taking care of in Stan. And it grew because everything we do for these guys is exactly what the mining community wants. Accommodation, catering, cleaning, turnkey. Types of contracts. Our construction contracts come in as an overall, what we call a not to exceed limit. But within that, it is not as if we come in and they say, build this whole hotel and you get paid at the end. Not at all. It is a matter of, in this location, please build us these rooms. Now, our bill of quantities, because of cash flow growth, we have a price for the wall, we have a price for the floor, we have a price for the windows, we have a price for the doors. So as our materials arrive, we invoice for the doors. We invoice when they finish and they see this wall is actually built. We invoice when they see the floor is there. So it's not, we don't say, take the risk, say we're going to complete everything and then get paid. Not at all. Because as far as we're aware, the client could change things halfway. And we have their people on site with us, so that at every stage they sign off. We finish the door, we send an invoice. We finish the floor, we send an invoice. We send the invoices in batches so that at every stage there is a sign off. And if there is an issue or somebody wants to change something, they can at any stage and we can get a change order. So all of these, a $26 million contract is broken down into what we call different task orders and spread across the life of the contract. So we're doing smaller bits between $250,000 to $1 million per shot. And within that, we invoice accordingly. Our services contract, fixed monthly billing. We have a variable element sometimes when you increase the size of the plot. We measure up everything. We give you a price per square meter. We do it every day. Plant and equipment maintenance contracts run like that. We have a labor cost and we have a material cost. And we're fairly transparent in everything that we do because every time we put a bid in, all of our financials go to all of our clients and they have the right to audit us for up to 3 years after we execute a contract. Accommodation tends to go for 3 to 6 months. We currently have a client who's just taken it for 5 years. As you can see, Adam Smith's been there for quite a while now. The UN, we just want a contract with them for 60 months and they pay, it's not a variable room rate. They've got the room, it's theirs, they pay for it every day. They live in it, they don't live in it, it's still their room because they have to have that. So these are, that they pay us for whether 50 staff, 10 staff, 12 staff. The construction is about a year and a half, I would say, by the time you start and demobilize. Services are now going, we used to start with 3 months, 3 months. Now we're going into 22 months, 3 years, 5 year types of contracts. Accommodation again now as well, much, much longer term contracts. This is our growth and this is a growth pattern that we've been having. And we are growing, we are profitable, we're still very tight, we're still, again, very lean and mean in how we operate the company. We still ensure that we cut, as I say, I always say, cut the coat to suit the cloth. We don't go randomly, willy-nilly, running out there and taking on contracts. I'm not sure if I have to go through all of this, but I would dread it because I've done it too many times. I will go through. The growth, why we came to market. We are taking on larger contracts. So as a client takes us on and says, can you do this? You want to say, yes, you can. And recently in the start of the year, we had a very, very nice 15 million pound contract. We were only given the 5 million pound portion because the client felt that we didn't have a strong enough balance sheet to take on the 15 million whilst he was also going to give us another contract somewhere else. So we actually lost out on the 10 million, even though we were the most technically compliant across all of the contracts. So we just lost out. But the client then said, if you could get larger, if you could get more, we could give you more because it's giving them stability. The upsell of additional services, every time we go in, by the time we've finished building it, we've finished putting things up, they go, oh, who can we get to service the generators? Yep, we're here. Who can we get to clean the toilets? We're here. How do we get the septic? We're there. It's a captive market. It's not as if they're going to go down the road and find another shop selling a Travis and Perkins, where normally the only ones there. normally the ones with the best research. Normally they've started out in the capital. Then they go, oh, we need to go to the regions. Who do we know that knows those regions? We're there. We know those regions. Before we enter a country, we traditionally do about 2 years of research. In the old days, it would be me, myself, a car, and hiking across some very wonderful places. But as we've grown, we send out the team to do what we call the research, the recce on the ground, and they will drive every logistical route so that we know exactly how long it takes. How many holes are there? Is it rain? When it rains, what happens? All of these are the things that have been driving the client to take us into new territories, new contracts, larger contracts. As you said, our growth to date has all been clients. It's not been us advertising or going out to the market and trying to sell. We're just using the existing clients and just going to a new country or upselling additional services. The market. The aid market runs to about 100 billion. UK spends about 13 billion, if I'm not mistaken. The Germans spend about 17 billion. The US spends about 30 billion on projects around the world. And they go in different areas. An average mission, MINUSCA, when it started, because of 300 million, then we went up to 629 million. UNSOA was small. Darfur started at 200 million. It ended up at $1.7 billion per annum was the one UN agency spend allocated for that one mission, 1.7 billion. We're not looking to capture all of that. We're just trying to get our portion that suits what we do. And in our pipeline, on average, we have about 200 million of contracts that we've put bids in. We're waiting for awards. Some awards take 3 months, some awards take a year, some awards take 6 months. But these are all existing clients. For the IPO, we're now able to put in not the $2 million types of bids, but put in the $5 million, $10 million, $20 million types of bids. And again, as I say, we have been working now, Western governments, UN, what we're branching out into that says this, is the mining clients and looking at the other clients, like going in after the German for aid money, not just the current existing ones that we have, but looking at the other governments, the other Western governments. Our differentiators were compliance. We've been compliant from day one because we wanted to make a difference. My husband is Swedish. He is very, very, and one thing he always said, it has to make a difference. If it's not going to make a difference, then what's the point? We never went to Iraq because it was not compliant, because there were so many things going on, we weren't comfortable. Everything we do has to be transparent. Otherwise, our reputation would sink. Nobody would do business with us. Risk management. Think we work in difficult places, there's a really good reason for that. Every possible contingency that could occur has been factored into it. And when we do our pricing, we're not working on plan A. I don't believe in anything above LMM maybe. We're working on all the way down the alphabet. Everything that can go wrong, that will go wrong, how will we mitigate it? How do we risk, how do we profile the cost? How do we take the delays? How do we think, what's going to happen if everything goes spectacularly wrong? Well, we've been insured from day one because from day one, my father was a banker and also in insurance. And I just like the thought, it's like IBM, you just know you're kind of a little bit safe there. So we took the insurance. Nobody would give insurance. But because we've maintained the relationship, Lloyd's managed wrote us a bespoke policy for our accommodation in Somalia to cover it for business continuity, political violence and everything else. No other company out there has that type of insurance. So we cover all the bases. We're covering all of our employees, of course. We're covering every kind of risk that we can think of in these policies. But at the same time, in our work itself, every item is priced to the nth degree of location and the backup and backup staff and the rotations of staff. And what if the government shuts down for a month in Christmas? How do we mitigate that? What's the impact on our cost? These are all lessons learned. We have 39 nationalities, a very senior team that have been there, seniors and can wear the T-shirt backwards. And it's all that information that we carry. I mean, when you open up the spreadsheets on these things, the computer groans. The team are good, clear reporting structure. We have a head office that has finance, HR, logistics, procurement. They're mirrored identically in our field offices. So our field offices have exactly the same positions as our head office. So our field guys, the program management guys, they actually report to their country manager, but at the same time, their direct line from the head office is finance controls finance as well, HR, and we change seats. All of our head office staff have to take somebody else's seat in the field operation and sit in their chair and execute. It provides internal audit and also ensures that we are all working along the same patterns with the same kinds of habits, and there's double checking on each one. Maybe the country manager missed something, maybe the HR did something, but his own line manager of HR would know. Because of this mirror, kind of mirror images that we have, it means that we have a very easy access to data. All of the data is on the cloud. We have very easy and very quick responses to problems that can arise. We've always delivered, touch wood. We have not yet failed on our delivery, because if we are going to have a problem, we do put our hand up and say, client, this is the problem, this is the reasoning. If we hadn't factored it in, which would be unusual, but generally we have given the client things that we feel could arise should they not make decisions early. We have all of the industry certifications, which normal out. And our local content is huge. We've always believed, I come partly from West Africa, I've been through enough wars there where people don't have the opportunity. And you realize that people may not be educated, but they may be very, very capable of doing a very good job. And we've always made a mandate to hire locally and recruit locally. Reasons are, it adds to our security. We create jobs in the field. We train people. We pull them up to the standards required, so that even if they go off, we can always pull them back in. They have our standards. They've worked with us. They're trained to use what they have. A lot of them learn English as a byproduct. We train them in generators. We have the mechanics. We have the vehicle mechanics, welding, carpentry, cleaning, janitorial, sous chefs, disinfecting hospitals, you name it, we've trained it. So in Central Africa, we're running at 90% local content, which is nearly unheard of. At the beginning of the year, we had 30% of them were women in the construction field, which was huge. We're lower now. And in Somalia, we're at 67% locals that have been trained. We won an award from the ministry because of how we have encouraged the local content and developed giving them jobs. And for each of these guys, we give jobs, we push them to open bank accounts, we push them to get into the system, we do their PAYE for them. So they all actually are suddenly recognized workers in a country that normally has nothing. We are always, getting, my Swedish husband, all the dots have to be aligned before we can move. And it's good practice. Because we've been doing it for so long, it becomes habit. So everybody knows what we have to do before we enter a country. But these are also our USPs. Client comes to us because they know that if we say we're going to operate for you somewhere like Mozambique, we've got all the necessary permissions. We understand what we're doing. We know what the local laws are. We know what needs to be done for that country. It's not a willy-nilly decision of saying, yeah, we can do it and we'll figure it out later. We figure it out before we get there. Tender process, we get invited to about 45 tenders a month. They come in automatic to the office from varying UN agencies. As I say, the rest are clients that grow, client referrals, that's for new ones. But once you're on like the MOD one now, it becomes automatic. So we get these every month. In the past, we only look at those that are profitable in the areas that we feel very comfortable working in and in the types of jobs that we know we can exceed our own KPIs. So having said that, we don't take on all the tenders. We say no to 90-something percent of them. And also in the past, we didn't have the cash to do all of them. So you'd have to choose, this will give us 40% margin, this will give you 35%, 40 wins. That was literally it. At the moment now, we're going to obviously have to start counting how many we bid on and follow through on that. But we get these as a regular. When it comes in through the door, depending on the team, depending on the country, they'll decide whether or not it's us for us to, can we do it? Can we do the expectations? Can we price it? Yes. And we do a full assessment of this contract. Now, when we say we do a full assessment, our labor costs are not just salary of the guy. It's the salary, it's the food he eats when he's at location, it's his airtime, it's his telephone, it's his personal, his PPEs, what he's clothes, it's his travel, his vaccination, his police clearance, his Interpol clearance. All of this is our cost of labor. It's factored to the nth degree, including the backup if he gets sick or something goes wrong. For every screw, nut, bolt, plywood, it's priced into the contract and it's priced with the logistics by sea, land and air to every location in that country. So when we put a pricing sheet together, it's done to cover everything. If there's anything in there we feel that the client may not have thought of, we actually have a separate sheet where we put in, well, you know, the mini surprises. Clients in the old days hated us for it because we'd say, you haven't factored in the rainy season. The rainy season in Central Africa lasts for about 4 months. And it's not small rain. It's I will wash your life out rain. Everything goes in the rain. You can't do anything. But if you do want us to operate during that time, it's going to be 30% extra because we can only do these hours. We have to cover this. We have to do that. If you're planning to bring things in during Ramadan at this location, please be advised that the port is shut for 12 days of Eid. So again, if you're going to incur demurrage, you're going to be calculated $150 a day, or we will give you our own container and you're not charged demurrage. These are all in the sheet, and we go through these with the client so that as anything that we feel wasn't priced in the actual sheet based on their requirement, all of the others are there, and we can actually go through all of them and see who, what, and how we add that into the main pricing sheet. The country teams all double check this to make sure that our team hasn't missed anything, and we use their knowledge to input in. And the variables, we lock in our suppliers. By the time we get the contract, we can go back to the suppliers, lock them in and say, right, we want to buy this over the 1 year for this price. During the rough days of the 2008 and 9, a lot of the suppliers in the UAE and elsewhere were crying. They couldn't get work. We were taking them into remote Africa, so they were constantly selling. And our suppliers gave us great terms because we were very poor before, and I negotiated them to the death and beyond. So we managed to get good terms. And we're still working on this model, same suppliers. Say we're very compliance-led, signatory to the UN Global Compact, and we monitor it very, very closely on the ground. We have an external feed for whistleblowing. We have an external NGO that takes care of it for us. And we do our own audits internally and externally. And the independent agency audits our suppliers. They audit the people that we work with to make sure that all of us are compliant. And if there is anything, they can raise it independently of us. ABC, just because we work in Africa, doesn't mean that there's any of cash payments. Andrew and his team have opened over 5,000 accounts in Somalia so that we don't use cash. East Africa works on money transfers on the phone, makes life easier. We're not allowed any single point of contact with clients. It's two or more RA staff. If we're going in for any governmental type meetings, let's say Ministry of Labour, it will be with our lawyers. Our lawyers will be with us. Somebody will be with us to independently verify what was going on so that we're sure. We talk to our staff, we explain to them the merits of actually having a 5-year job than trying to steal something for $1,000 or $500, whereas by having us in the job, by having the job, sorry, with us, we have a PAYE, we're paying into their national pension for what it is, but they have a status in that country that they didn't have before. This is done regularly. Every month, compliance goes out and they do it over and over and over again. This is what we came in for at the time. We got the 24 million, I think we raised at the time. And that's what we raised in, pounds, yeah. And we are UK PLC. This is our board, Sangeeta Shah. Alec brings in the audit. They're all, well, audit as well. Philip knows corporate. Ian, who knows more about the resources on planet Earth than any other person, I think. He ran one of the largest funds, natural resource funds. And these are all active NEDs. We interviewed to get people that would add value to us, people that could actually give us advice. We wanted adults at the children's table because we felt that we were still kids in this world that you're in. I mean, I can tell you how to get, bridge to Central Sudan, but I can't really tell you much about stocks and shares in London. So that's what they're for. And their advice has been invaluable so far. We had our first board meeting and they really did add value to what we're doing and gave us advice on what we should be looking at, what we should be thinking and how we should be growing. So in a nutshell, there's our summary. We are in a unique position between where we are now. Our largest competitor is roughly $1.5 billion in size and more. Some of them are $4 billion in size. And so we're just at the cusp of this growth. It's a long hike up, but I think we've managed so well so far. The team are phenomenal. We have an excellent team. Our core staff have been with us 6 to 10 years. So everybody knows what they're doing. And the clients know that we deliver. We always deliver. And we always ensure that we have their interests at the forefront to make sure if there's a mistake, our hands are up. If we feel they've missed it, we point it out. If we can add value to them, if we can give them something back, we do. Governments like us because we hire locally. We train. We don't just walk in, import a pile of workers and then leave. The aim is to leave the place better than when we came in. And we're obviously still busy growing, still expanding, still bidding on much, much longer term contracts, larger contracts. I think the one thing is, of course, the larger the contract, more time it takes to bid it and more time it takes to award it and get the decision. But it's been a very positive year, despite having to trail through half of the city of London in the start of it. But well worth it.
Thank you very much. Good?
Oh, thank you.
The award videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.